Howdy folks, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. It's now December the 5th, 2018. Man, the year's almost out. That's crazy. If you're new to the podcast and you've just found my channel on YouTube or whatever, you can head over to iTunes or any podcasting software and listen to it for free there. Or you can head over to inthebluespodcast.com and listen over there as well. I upload everything to there. Then it gets spread out to all the different podcasting software, but it hits YouTube first. So if you don't already have YouTube Premium, which used to be called YouTube Red, you can also use that like a podcasting piece of software as well. You can play videos, lock your phone, and then listen to it on the go, or download the video and listen to it offline. I really like that. I do that a lot with a lot of other videos that I watch on YouTube as well. Trying out this different microphone today. I used this for a live gig recently and I loved it, so hopefully it sounds good. I did some tests obviously before doing this podcast and I thought, you know what? This is one of those kind of microphones. It sounds pretty sweet. And it also blocks out a lot more of the ambient noise. So it's going to be something that I probably use a little bit more coming up on the actual channel. For those interested, this is a Rode M2 microphone. It's a condenser mic made for live vocals, but I love the sound of this. I just think it sounds pretty good, but if it sounds crap, I'm sure I'll hear it in the comments. So just let me know. So I thought I'd give you a quick channel recap and just explain a little bit about what's happened sort of over the last 6 weeks. So about 6 weeks back, the channel hit 100,000 subscribers. I had to wait roughly 30 days before I thought YouTube were going to offer me, you know, the silver play button thing that you get as, you know, reaching the milestone. They send one out to you and I got no notification about it or no email about it. So I started corresponding with them. And they said something went wrong, so they're sending one out, which is fantastic. So it is coming. The 100,000 play silver play button award will be hopefully in the background somewhere. I might replace one of the posters, or I'll find somewhere to put it that looks cool anyway. But so a huge thank you to everyone who supports the channel. It's fantastic. Another massive milestone, which isn't far away, 60 million views. Man, it's insane. 60 million views. I might not have the most subscribers out there, but I do think the channel is pretty big in terms of views, and it's a testament to like people coming back and watching stuff and people finding, you know, gear videos that are still really old that just pop up in suggested videos and all that kind of stuff. So it's funny because my most popular video has had 2.5 million views, or give or take something like that, which is insane. If you haven't seen it, I'll put a link up in the cards over here and you can check it out. I won't spoil what it is, but it's pretty funny to think that a video like that has had so many views, but I think the one under that has had over a million anyway, which is pretty cool. So yeah, lots of cool stuff happening. The silver play button, 60 million views and 100,000 subscribers. Wow. I never thought the channel would be this big when I first started it. I never thought it would even get past 10,000 subscribers or even 1,000. But once I sort of put my mind to it and thought, you know what, I want to grow this and I want to try to make the content better and better and get other people involved and make it more interesting and try some YouTube firsts, I thought, you know what? I think this has potential to grow. And this is what I do. This is the first year now that I've not had to do a day job ever. What? How insane is that? So I did get offered to go back to my old job to do a couple of weeks part-time work or casual work. And I said, no, I'm too busy, which is a good feeling. I'm way more busy now than I've pretty much ever been in my life compared to a normal day job, but I love what I do and I don't plan on stopping. I also plan on diversifying with a few other channels coming up, which I've already started, but I'll keep that for another video. So recently I've been on a mission to try to find the perfect speaker for my Marshall DSL-40CR amplifier. Now that particular amplifier I purchased earlier in the year and I love it. The stock speaker didn't sound too bad, but it was just that little bit too bright for me and maybe a little bit too bass heavy as well. It's an interesting sort of sound. Marshalls have their own kind of unique character. I took that speaker out and I put in the Texas Heat, which is arguably one of my favorite speakers ever. It works great in Fenders. It works great in PVs. It works great in solid state amps. Just about anything you put it in, it sort of makes everything sound better. But the interesting thing was I had that in the Marshall and it kind of lost its character. It still sounded good, but it sounded a little bit too dark and it sounded a little bit too bass heavy. And it wasn't bright enough in the right kind of ways. So in the end, it didn't really sound like a Marshall anymore. It didn't sound bad, but it just wasn't the sound that I liked. So I went back and I put the stock speaker back in again and I listened to that and I went, man, that's bright. Unless I've got the amp cranked and lots of gain and all that kind of stuff. It was just a little bit too bright. So the way some tube amps work is the louder you turn them up, the less top end comes in, right? So you get it to a sweet spot around 1 or 2 o'clock on the master volume, on the channel volumes, right? So the masters are all the way up, but the volume actually for each channel is up at about 1 to 2 o'clock. So it's really loud. And then you start sort of getting a smoother kind of tone, which is what I like. But I found like the stock speaker wasn't right. So I went back to the Texas Heat and instantly I went, that's not the right speaker for this amp. And I thought, what about a Swamp Thing? And I went, nah, that'll be too bright. I just know what those speakers are like. I love the Swamp Things, but that American sort of voicing, it isn't the right thing to be putting into a Marshall. And this is all subjective to what I like. So the process I took was to get the right sort of sound for the amp, and I got it right the first time. I went out and I purchased an Eminence Tonka speaker. So the process I used to find this is basically like it is a process of elimination, and it's also a process of experience as well. So one of the things that I may have the advantage of owning a lot of amps over the years and having changed speakers so many times in my amps, I kind of knew what I was looking for in terms of tone. I wanted something kind of similar to the Texas Heat, but with more top end, but also sort of like a punchy mids. So I started going through the Eminence website, and their website is fantastic. It's got all the actual frequency response graphs and all that kind of stuff on the site, as well as lots of tone samples and playing samples. And now they've got a YouTube channel, and this made it really easy for me to say, you know what, that's the speaker I'm looking for. So I compared all the graphs, all the frequency response graphs from the Texas Heat, the Swamp Thing, and the Tonka, and I settled on that. I also went through many other speakers as well, but the Tonka was one of those ones that I didn't really know anything about that speaker. I've never heard it before. I never really heard of it either, and I thought, it's either that or a Wizard, and I started going through, and the Wizard sounded and maybe looked a little bit too much on paper, like it could have been just that little bit too bright for my amp. Now, I didn't want to just be cutting heads off, otherwise I might as well have left the stock speaker in there. So I went for the Tonka based on a few factors: what I was hearing in videos, what I was hearing in the sound samples, and then comparing those sound samples and videos to also the other sound samples and videos of the Swamp Thing or Texas Heat. And I went, you know what? The description of that pretty much sold me as well of the Tonka. It said it was a punchy sort of sound, but it also worked really great with a Telecaster. And I thought, ooh, this could be the right speaker. It's an English voice speaker, so it's one of their, you know, Redcoat series speakers instead of the Blue Patriot ones, which are the US ones. And I thought, yeah, this could be the speaker. Now, the video that you've seen, I'm not sure if the other one goes live tonight or not, but I did a full review of the speaker as well. But that first impressions video, man, I love that speaker. I've used it live a number of times, and we actually shot the 100,000 subscriber live jam recently as well, and I used that amp with that speaker, and a lot of the guys said pretty positive things about it. It's made the amp way more 3D, which is that term that I love to throw around. It just really cuts through the mix. I've got more headroom. The speaker has very low distortion, next to no distortion in that amp, so you just get this big, round, clean sound. Now, I know a few people have said to me, oh, what about the Tonka Lite, which is the neodymium speaker? I finally got a chance to A-B those as well. I think the Tonka kills it. And this is all subjective, but what I noticed from the Tonka Lite, which neodymium speakers, for those who don't know, they're nice and light, they're loud and all that kind of stuff. It didn't have the attitude of the Tonka. You're substituting maybe a bit of oomph and clarity for speaker distortion and lightness. Speaker distortion is very, very favorable to a lot of people too. Like, that's why a lot of people will buy a Greenback, because the cone inherently kind of breaks up at certain volumes as well. It adds to the sound. For me though, I like the speaker to stay clean. I only want to use power or preamp distortion to get the sound. So I always find the bigger or the better the headroom in a speaker, the overall better the sound, the better the projection in the room too, and the louder it usually is. So one of my deciding factors always when I buy a speaker is to see what the sensitivity level is. The higher that is, the louder the speaker is going to be. Usually the more clean headroom you're going to get as well. And it sounds better in the mix. So if you're playing at home, it doesn't really matter too much. There's almost no need to be swapping speakers at home. But if you're playing live and you're looking for something that your amp's not going to maybe giving you, speaker replacement is the best thing you can do. So overall, the process is pretty simple for me to go out and pick a new speaker. The first thing I do is generally try to work out what I don't like about the speaker that's in there. And then I'll go onto the Eminence website or whatever website of your choice. If you're into Celestion speakers, you can go there as well. And then you basically go through as many PDFs and try to overlay stuff and see what kind of frequency response you can see on paper. Listen to as many samples as you can. Even hit YouTube and see if you can find someone who plays a similar amp to you that might have already replaced the speaker. There'll be plenty of demos online already about that. So the great thing about YouTube is this exact resource. There's usually someone who has played a certain amp with a certain speaker. But the first thing to do, make sure you work out what you don't like about the speaker that's in there. Start from there and just listen to as much stuff as you can. A/B as many videos as you can, and then just trust your ear and hope for the best. Like I said, I've bought some duds in the past, but the last three speakers I bought were spot on for the amps that I wanted them in. So you get better at this stuff over time. One of the biggest requests I've had over the last few years was, am I ever going to review a Harley Benton guitar? Now, we did a few of them while we were away overseas in Germany earlier this year, or 2 months ago, or whatever it was. But there were no lefties, so I was unable to get my hands on any. But today, I was actually sent this. This is the Harley Benton TE-52. Probably the most requested guitar I've had come up in comments or questions. Are you going to review this? Can you get your hands on one? All that kind of stuff. So Toman were nice enough to send out a couple of guitars. One's a right-handed one for Rick, which is a different model. I also did a live unboxing experience, you know, to see how they were packed and all that kind of stuff. If that interests you, if you're looking at getting Harley Benton guitars, links up in the cards, and you can check out that video I shot earlier today too. So this particular guitar, my first impression of it was, wow, this is heavy. It actually weighs quite a lot. It's about, you know, roughly the same weight as my SX Telecaster, which is back here. I know I'm going to get a lot of questions relating to, well, is this better than the SX, or is the SX better than this? They're just different guitars. Now, I'm going to actually criticize this a little bit. One of the things I thought would be a little bit nicer is the finish. And, you know, I know it's an inexpensive guitar, so I can't always expect too much. I think they sell for about 138 euros. And I'll put on screen whatever that is in local currency here or there. But basically, the thing with this is where the frets meet the fretboard. And this is just sort of like minuscule, nitpicky sort of stuff. And I'm not talking about the fret edges. The fret edges are fine. There's no sharp frets. That gets the big thumbs up already. But it almost looks relicked along the edge here, like someone's just grabbed a file and kind of like sanded it down without really thinking, or filed it down without really looking or thinking about it too much. And it was clearly done after the finish was put on. So, yeah, there's a clear discoloration there. And there's also a couple of scuffs and some sort of sloppy craftsmanship up along the nut as well. I'll put some pictures on screen so you can see them up close. I'm on manual focus on my camera for the podcast right now, so it's a bit hard for me to sort of focus in on this sort of stuff. But the finish, yeah, at least on the neck, isn't perfect. Another criticism I have of it is that some of the tuners don't feel great. Now, it's still got the same strings that it's turned up with, and sometimes if the strings aren't done upright, the kind of tension can feel a little bit funny. So I want to restring this before I comment any more on the tuners. I'm going to do a full review of this once the strings have been replaced. All I can tell you is some of the tuners feel really tight right now and some feel kind of loose, just a turn. I don't know if that's just something that I need to, you know, take the strings on and off and try again, or whether it's some sort of flaw in these particular tuners. But, you know, these are just little things that you're going to expect when you buy a guitar that's inexpensive. Now, I'm really thankful that Toman have sent this out. I'm not, you know, ungrateful about it. But my first impression, honestly, isn't really overly blown away. Am I as blown away with this as I was with the SX Telecaster? Not at all. SX Telecaster eats it alive in terms of just attention to detail. There's none of the same flaws I just mentioned on this guitar. The fret edges feel better. There's no scuffing or anything along the fretboard edge. You know, and that sort of stuff doesn't bother me either. I don't care if a guitar's got marks on it. I can just, you know, I know people out there are really fussy with sort of things like this. So it's worth mentioning that, in my opinion, the SX is a nicer looking guitar in terms of how it plays in comparison. They're both about the same. They both feel pretty good. Like, if I was to do a gig with either one of these, it wouldn't be a problem. While I am going to do a shootout in terms of tone between both of these guitars, the thing that I have to point out is I love the neck pickup on the Harley Benton. I think it sounds great. My biggest criticism of the SX VTG series Tally, which is this one, is the fact the neck pickup could use a little bit more top end. And Harley Benton definitely has that. I like the pickups they've put in there. So these little cosmetic issues might not be a huge deal breaker for anybody. It wouldn't be for me either. Look, if I was to buy just the Harley Benton and I didn't know about this, I'd be happy enough with it. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I just think there's something to be said about how the experience is when you first get your hands on a guitar and how it feels and looks and all that kind of stuff. And it just feels like this is maybe just in relation to the guitar that I've got here. With this particular T50 that arrived to the house, I could honestly and comfortably say that the SX is just a nicer guitar in terms of attention to detail. Now, the interesting thing about all of this is people that love Harley Benton will be going, oh, well, mine's fine, and that might be the case. So we also got a secondary guitar with P90 pickups turn up, and it's flawless. It looks as good or better than my PRS SE. No kidding. It looks stunning, and that's the guitar Rick will be doing a video for coming up. So, look, odds are it could just be one of those guitars that turned up with a couple extra scratches and marks on it than what I probably would have expected. It may have also have been like an ex-demo guitar. It didn't look like it when I opened it up, but everything was packed properly and all that. But you just never know. When they send this sort of stuff out to YouTubers, it could just be ex-display stuff. It could be just the way that it is. So I'm not going to say it's a dud. It's a nice sounding guitar. It feels great in the hand. The neck shape's great, all that kind of stuff. Just my first impressions is it's very, very heavy. The attention to detail and the finish, especially on the neck and only on the neck really and the nut, isn't perfect. Should it be perfect for the price? Yeah, I don't know. I'll leave that up to you. So this next topic, I wanted to actually ask everybody for their input and opinion. I'll leave a poll up in the cards here and you can let me know what you think. So, you know what? One thing I've seen a lot of over the years is when I get less expensive guitars like SX guitars and I plug them into my Marshall or my Fender or the Kemper with the profiles of those amps, a lot of people say you shouldn't plug them into such good amps because anything will sound good. And that's really true. I mean, an average guitar, I'm not saying they're average, but even a cheap guitar through, you know, a Fender or a Marshall is going to sound pretty good, right? It's just the way that it is. You can't really do the opposite. So the thought process is if you've got a custom shop Telecaster and you're plugging it into a $50 piece of crap, it's still not going to sound good no matter what you do, unless you're the best, one of the best players out there. But it's much easier to get a better tone having a great amplifier, and it doesn't really matter what guitar you plug into it to some extent, right? I mean, it has to be playable, but I've done a video on this with Ryan quite some time ago. So the thought process was whether or not it might be better to sort of plug less expensive guitars into less expensive amplifiers, because that's what people are going to use. Now, in my possession right now, I actually have a few other amps that I could use for this exact thing. We've got a couple of the Joyo Bant amp amplifiers. That's not easy to say. Give that a go. So I thought maybe I'd start using those more for stuff like cheaper effects pedals and cheaper guitars, because I think that might relate more to the end user than maybe, you know, a $150 guitar going into a $1,000 or $1,500 amplifier or something like that. So let me know in the poll up here whether or not you agree that I should be using more budget-friendly stuff for more budget-friendly guitars or pedals. So post down below. You can also vote up in the cards, like I mentioned, and I'll take it on board. If the majority of people want to hear less expensive guitars in less expensive amps, that's what I'll do. And if not, then I'll keep doing what I'm doing. So just let me know in the comments below. One video request I've had that's come through more than just about anything else in recent times was to see if I could do a shootout between the Fender Mustang GT100, which is the most recent amplifier, and the Fender Mustang 3 version 2. I always get the numbers confused. Hopefully I said that correctly. And I finally got a chance to do that. So my friend Khalid was nice enough to lend me his amp, and I did a shootout, and I tried to be as fair as I could. Same microphone, same mic position, same volume and all that kind of stuff. I did it the best I could. Now, there were some clear differences in terms of tone, and it was basically to say, well, how much better is this new one than the old one, or is it better at all? That was kind of the thing about it. A lot of people said, should I upgrade? And I was like, you know, let me do this video and then you can make up your own mind. So I used some clean samples and I used some overdriven samples and a couple of different amp models as well. So the first poll on the video was, which one sounds better clean? The Fender Mustang 3 version 2, which is the old one, got 57% of the votes. The GT100 got 36% of the votes, and Can't Hear a Difference got 5% of the votes. So I would say that's an overwhelming majority of people ended up liking the Mustang 3 version 2 more. Now, in terms of clean, the way I was hearing that, at least with the same settings, was the older amp sounded brighter. It was way brighter. I almost feel like they shouldn't even... The patches you make for the older amps shouldn't even be part of the new Fuse software. And I say that because they're two separate and two very different sounding amplifiers with the same setting. It's not even close. Some profiles or patches do sound similar, but most of them don't. And so I don't know. I just feel like you need to re-EQ each amp a particular way. And that's not to defend the GT100, because what I'm about to say next may surprise you. So the poll results for which one sounded better dirty, the Mustang 3 version 2 or the Mustang GT100. So 84% of the people said the old amp sounded better. 84%, with 12% of the people saying Mustang GT100 sounded better dirty. And Can't Hear a Difference only got 3%. So this tells you a story. And this is what I said in that video. If you like dirty tones, the older amp eats it alive. The older amp sounds so much better. And the night after I shot that video, I returned the amp to my friend. I took it up to the jam night and he played one of the patches live and it sounded so good. It was unbelievably loud. It sounded 3D. It had all the stuff that just sounded great. And everyone was shocked it was a modeling amp. The funny thing is though, on clean, I kind of prefer the new one. And this is subjective stuff. What I prefer about the new one is it has some new overdrive models, and you can rearrange stuff on the clean channel to sound great in the room, and that's the way that I run it. One of the really cool things about the new amplifier, though, is it's way lighter. So if you're looking for a light and loud little amp, it's nice and easy to get around. I was really shocked when I picked up the old Fender Mustang version 2, how heavy it actually was. You know, it's been a while since I picked one up, and I went, wow, it's lighter than, say, a Marshall DSL-40 or a Fender Hot Rod Deluxe or something like that, but you know, the new amp is just, it's maybe a third of the weight. So it's way lighter. It's nice and easy to get around, throw it in the car, you get some good tones. Now, the interesting thing is my friend Rick also knows that the clean channel on the new amps is really good. Being able to stack a Klon into it and all that kind of stuff, he was able to get some really great tones at the jam with his GT200, which always sounded like it was in another room. Something about the phasing, all that sort of stuff, it seems to be ironed out on at least the clean tones, which is where Fender shines anyway. They don't really shine with the high gain tones. The supersonic patch sucks on the new amp. I don't know how they got it so wrong. Everything about it sounded just terrible in comparison to the old amp. The old amp just really nails it. So I hope Fender maybe... I don't like to say they regress back to the old software. I hope they can, with whatever they do next, I hope it's better than both amps. It was interesting that they sort of took a major step backwards with the GT100 or those series of amps, the GT amps in general. The new firmware does improve the clean stuff, but the drive channels just still sound pretty lackluster. And, you know, I did a shootout and you could hear the difference. But I honestly think that you have to sort of basically tweak the amps as two separate units. There's not like one patch is going to sound great on both. That's why if I do a Mustang Monday now, it has to be tailored towards specific users of one particular amp as opposed to guys who own the old amps, because they just don't sound the same. One thing I've had a lot of questions about in regards to the Mustang GT amplifiers is whether or not I was going to replace the speaker in that amplifier with the Texas Heat, which is what I did in the old series of amplifiers, and it was a massive improvement. It transforms the amp into something even better. If you've not done that, I can highly recommend it. Now, in these new amps, the speaker, the stock speaker that's in them, at least in the GT100, is a 4-ohm speaker. And the Texas Heat I have is an 8-ohm speaker. And no, that won't blow the amp up, but it runs less efficiently, right? So one of the things that you need to take into account is you probably put it in and get a lot less volume. If I was to say put a 4-ohm speaker in an 8-ohm amp, that's where the problem starts. But going the other way around, it's not so bad. So the first problem I had was the speaker didn't fit properly. Now, there's this little... I'll try and put some B-roll or something on screen because I did shoot this video. The way that the original speaker sort of slots in under the head and into the back of the cabinet, the Texas Heat has a very different sort of chassis to it, and it was unable to really get in there properly. But I was able to put a couple of screws in there, which isn't ideal, I know, but I thought I'd give it a test. And you know what? It didn't improve the amplifier. It definitely wasn't as loud, which I knew that would be the case. The Texas Heat's a super efficient speaker. It's really, really loud. It sounded great in the version 2 Mustangs, the number 3 that I had it in there. And I had it in there for a long time, and it was just a great speaker in that amp. But in these new ones, it doesn't fit properly, and B, I don't think it really improved the tone that much, especially on the drive channel tones. Nothing sounded better. I couldn't fix those, right? Not all of them are bad, but just the ones that I was hoping that would give me some improvement on, I wasn't overly impressed. I got to say, though, it did impact the clean channel tones a little bit. I thought it kind of sounded a little bit better. But that said, to get it to fit properly, you have to modify the little sort of bottom part of the head that's sort of where the speaker slides in under. It's hard to explain, but you'll see what I mean on screen. It's one of those things where I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to bother with it. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I can get more out of the amp by swapping the speaker. In this particular case, it just doesn't fit. So I put the stock speaker back in and I'm pretty much done. So if you're thinking about buying a new Eminence Texas Heat or another speaker like that, just be really careful. It might not fit. And make sure you get a 4-ohm speaker if you want to keep the efficiency of the amplifier there and make it as loud as possible. If you're putting an 8-ohm speaker in, like I mentioned, it's definitely not going to be as loud. Overall, I don't think it's worth your time. So one thing I've wanted to do for a while, and I got a chance to do it last Sunday, was film a blues jam. And this was one that I put together with Dr. Rick, Ryan, Dom, who's another phenomenal guitar player. Wait till you hear this guy. We got together with Drew, who's a great drummer. You've seen him on my channel as well. Richo, who's another fantastic drummer. I don't know if he's really been featured on the channel at all. He might have been in the background on some of the shoots or live clips, but yeah, you'll get to hear him play. He's a great player. My friend Ken on bass guitar, he's from Waycross, Georgia as well. So shout out to the folks from there who watch the channel as well. Now, this is one of those moments where, you know, we could have just picked songs and played something a little more rehearsed, but I thought, nah, the essence of these blues jams is to go in blind. So, you know, I asked the drummer to kick off a groove and we'd start. We'd pick a key and we'd start. Or I'd just say, shuffle in this key and we'd go. Or Rick would say, okay, we're in G. Here's the feel. Let's see what happens. So we had 3 guitar players up at once, which was fantastic. And we captured some really great tones, some really great playing, and just some really great moments. And I'm putting together a video that's a little bit different. So it's not going to be like a 3-hour long blues jam or anything like that. It's going to be a condensed video with some gear rundown stuff as well about what we're using and just some talking as well mixed in. And we captured some really great stuff. So you'll hear me sing. You'll hear Rick do some singing. You'll hear us both do some playing. And I think the tones are pretty mighty. It was one of those, and we were all playing really, really well. I don't think any of us really having a bad day. So in terms of just an improv session, it went well. And that's the essence of these kind of nights is, you know, you go to a blues jam, you never know what you're going to pick. Unless you go back time and time again, you know, most people pick the same 3 songs. But I think I'm, you know, one of my strengths as an actual playing musician is to be able to take lyrics from one song and put them over almost any feel. And that's the way blues works. You can kind of sing Stormy Monday over Crossroads or vice versa. It doesn't really matter, right? As long as you can get that separation between your hands and your mind, you're good to go. And your voice, obviously. So one of those things is with the blues jams is that spontaneity, just being able to get in there and play and try to complement everything that's going on. I see way too many times at blues jams where guitar players are just playing big, fat, heavy chords the entire time, lots of loud strumming, all that kind of stuff. And that's the exact opposite of what we tried to do. We went in with the goal was to play musically. I think we succeeded. So this video will be a whole lot of fun. If it goes over well, we might do it again. We might maybe change the theme up or something on the next one. But I think overall, this video is pretty fun. And if you enjoy it, let me know in the comments of that video. I plan on hopefully having it up in the next couple of weeks, all being well. It's a bit of an editing job. There was 5 or 6 cameras. So we had a good couple of hours of footage over multiple SD cards. It's not shot in 4K. So for those who 4K fans. I apologize. A small percentage of the people watch 4K, but I shot it in 1080p at like 50 frames per second or something. So it should look pretty good. But that was the only way I could do it with having enough memory, because it was just too much stuff. So we did that. We had mic'd everything up as well. So we got a really great studio kind of sound, well, live studio sound anyway. So I had my Zoom recorder and I think we kind of nailed the audio. Everything sounds great. And that's why I bought this microphone. So if you're wondering why I have this mic and why I'm not using my normal one, I was so blown away by how this sounded. And this is a microphone I've owned in the past, right? But I sold it when I hit some pretty tough times a while back. I just got rid of a lot of things. This particular mic is just a great live studio, live condenser microphone with that studio kind of sound. And yeah, I guess I'll find out if it sounds any good after the podcast. But, you know, like I said, I've tested it out. That's why I got this. I got it for that particular project. And both Rick and I were pretty impressed with how it sounded. So anyway, that's enough of that. I hope you enjoy the video when it does go up, and stay tuned for it, because I really think, like, you know, as much as we talk about gear and all of that kind of stuff, you know, I'll still be playing guitar live, even at jams, long after I finish with YouTube, whenever that day is, or if YouTube shuts down or whatever. So for me, live playing is kind of the essence of everything. It's where it's at. I love YouTube and it's a big part of what I do every single day. But live playing is pretty important for everybody's development, and it really will encourage you to be a better player. So if you've been playing at home for years and you're kind of tentative about getting out there, get out there. You'll be a better player in 3 months playing live than you would in a year and a half of playing at home. It will improve you out of sight, and you'll know all of your weaknesses extremely quickly. And I still find them in my playing when I play live at Blues Jams. You know, it might just be my independence needs to improve, or I play the same licks too many times. But one thing you'll see, and I hope this conveys on the video, is how much better we play when we've got a great band behind us, and how different we play. You know, if sometimes you go to the Blues Jams and you don't have a strong drummer or the bass player sucks, you're only as good as the weakest link in the band. You find when you've got a really sort of inexperienced rhythm section, we can put it that way, can't we? Yeah, inexperienced rhythm section, you tend to play over them and not really with, because you're trying to kind of tune them out. When you've got a great drummer like Richo or Drew, great bass player like Ken, it really makes you, it really inspires you to play, you know, dynamically and with feel, and you're responding to what's going on around you and not just playing over it. So if you do go to a blues jam, listen to what's going on and try to complement it. That would be my biggest suggestion. But I hope you like this video that's coming up. I think it'll be one of my better videos for the year. At least I hope so. All right, up next, I wanted to have a quick chat about some of the camera equipment I'm using on the channel and some of the upgrades I've made recently. So I always try to make the channel better in terms of video quality, in terms of production. I'm always trying to up, like, Guitar Search Saturday, my podcast. Just any of the videos I do, whether I'm shooting a video about a guitar or whatever, I try to make them look as good as I can. Sometimes I am working time effectively, but other times, like that little Krog guitar video I posted, you know, there's a lot of different cameras in the room, and it's great fun to be able to cut between them and have lots of different and interesting camera angles. I think it makes for a better viewing experience. So recently, thanks to the help through Patreon, I purchased a gimbal for my mirrorless cameras. So for those who don't know what it is, it's essentially a stabilizer. You mount your camera onto it and you can walk around like it's on wheels, basically. It doesn't look like you're taking steps. It's very, very smooth, or at least that's the concept of it. Problem I had with mine was it didn't work properly. So I ended up taking it back and I replaced it actually with one of these. This is the G85. Now, the stabilizer in the G85, for those who don't know, is great. This is what I shoot all of my overseas episodes of Guitar Search Saturday with, at least in Denmark and Sweden. And the GH5 stabilizer is even better. And it's one of those things where I realized, you know what, I probably didn't even need the gimbal, given if I use the right lens on the camera, the stabilization is awesome. It's this, you know, dual image stabilization thing. So I ended up getting another one of these G85s. So this is so similar to the GH5 that I'm shooting with right now. I've had one of these for 8 months or so, and I love it. I took this to Denmark and Sweden, and this is the other one. So I've got two of these now and the GH5. So you probably notice on some of the videos where we have a lot of cameras set up, the picture quality should hopefully look a little bit better. I still want to refine my lighting system right now. These lights are getting really old. And I've replaced the bulbs a few times. I want to get some LEDs coming up, but that'll be pretty much the last part of the video quality upgrade I'll be doing. I don't need any more lenses. I don't need any more stuff. I've got enough stuff now to do exactly what I want to do. The great thing about the camera I'm using right now, this microphone's going directly into it. And I love that functionality. I think that's great. And having a less expensive option like the G85, you know, if I was to recommend any camera to anyone starting out on YouTube, it would be the G85. Steve from Boston basically got me onto these Pixelix. And I went out and I bought the GH5. Now, the GH5 can do quite a bit more than this, but for most people, and for what I usually shoot when I shoot on my regular videos, I'm only shooting with the same kind of codecs and frame rates I could find in the G85. So it kind of makes the GH5 a little redundant in some ways, but it, like right now I'm shooting in 50 or 60 frames per second or something like that. So it should hopefully look pretty cool in 4K too. So that's a really cool functional upgrade there if that's important to you. The G85 might not be the way to go, but it shoots brilliant 4K at, you know, 25 or 30p depending on where you live. But anyway, that's getting into a whole other tangent. If you're into tech stuff, check out my other channel up here. I've just started it, just hit 1,000 subscribers. So yeah, I'm really enjoying that. Next year, I plan on doing more and more on that channel as well, and probably releasing about 3 videos a week moving forward on In the Blues. I'm going to start probably posting 2 or 3 videos on that channel until I can grow that to hopefully 10,000 subscribers by the end of next year. That would be the goal. We'll see how we go. If you're not into tech stuff, though, don't subscribe to it. I want to try to keep that pretty separate to my guitar questions and guitar niche and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, check it out though. If you're into cameras, you're into audio, you know, that kind of stuff, have a look. There might be some videos on there that you might like as well. So one of the things I don't talk about a whole lot on the channel is Patreon. You hear me mention it only on 2 types of videos, the podcast and also on Guitar Search Saturday. But I thought I'd explain a little bit about how it's helped the channel. It's helped it immensely. And you've probably seen little upgrades here and there for camera equipment, whether or not it's just stuff like I need to buy hard drives to store the videos, I need to repair something or have it fixed, all of this kind of stuff. It really, really helps. So I try to use all the money, whether it's just directly or inadvertently, for the channel, because basically I don't charge companies. There's only 1 or 2 times where I'll charge a company for my time, and that's if the product isn't really worth my time. I really have to start to justify that, you know what, I'm going to get this thing for free, but is it worth spending 6 hours on if something's worth $30? So obviously it isn't. So I charge a baseline fee. It's really low. I like to not be paid for my videos. I know that's kind of counterintuitive. A lot of YouTubers won't do anything unless they're paid. I do the opposite. I try not to get paid. It sounds ridiculous, but my channel gets enough views that it can sustain my living, and I'm happy with that. It's not like I'm not killing it on YouTube. I'd probably make several $1,000 more if I charged the companies, but I choose not to take that model, and that's just me personally. A lot of YouTubers will disagree with me on that, but that's just the way I like to work. I think that sends a better message to the viewers than being paid for your time and going next, next, next. I'm not really into that. I'd like to try to get stuff to come in, and not everything I get to keep either. Like, there's some guitars recently I've had to try that aren't mine, and I got to give them back. It's just the way that it works, and that's fine too. So, you know, it's a bit hit and miss with what I get to keep. I cover my living expenses on 2 ways. I cover it with reselling the stuff that I'm allowed to keep, because I can't keep everything and I don't want to keep everything, and that sort of pays my way. And I choose that model over trying to be paid for every video that I produce, because you never can tell how well a video is going to do over time. And I look for longevity as opposed to just that instant short-term cash gratification. I could, you know, maybe make a few more dollars over 6 months than I could just by just having the video on YouTube, as opposed to, you know, getting $100 or whatever just up front. So my model's a little bit different to everybody else's, but a huge part of that is definitely the Patreon subscribers as well. I wanted to mention a few names and thank a few people in particular right here. So Cass, thank you so much. Kristen as well. You guys have been instrumental in supporting the channel. Mike, McKenzie, thank you so much. We've also BV, man, thank you again. Todd Flowers, awesome. Jamal Kareem, yeah, I think Jamal might be one of the most active users on the channel, so thank you so much. Greg and Steve, I can't thank you guys enough. That's, you know, the support is fantastic, and they're in the band on Patreon where essentially they get their names at the end of Guitar Search Saturday and on the podcast, but this time it's a little bit different. I'm sort of going into a little bit more about Patreon than I probably have ever explained before. Now, the cool thing about Patreon, for those who don't know how I operate it, a lot of people think, oh, you shouldn't put stuff behind paywalls. Well, I don't. So what's the benefit of people signing up, you might ask? I get first dibs on any ex-demo stuff I don't need. So for even $2, you might get a pedal half price than what it's worth. So if you were to go to the website and buy it for $200, you could join Patreon for $2 and maybe win it for a half price. I think that's pretty fair. That's way cheaper than I could sell it for, but because someone's actually helping me, I'm helping them back. And this is the model that I use on YouTube and on Patreon. I don't want to have hidden content for Patreon-only subscribers. And I made that very clear on my video on Patreon that that's not what the channel's about. I don't want to start putting things behind paywalls like that. The other thing, too, is that anyone who is in the $5 band up, get all my backing tracks that I jam to on my videos. And I don't make a lot of them, but I probably made 20 this year. So they're all free. Oh, well, free once you sign up. So anyone who subscribed to any amount can get dibs on any of my ex-demo gear that I do sell. I don't sell everything, obviously, but there's a lot of stuff every month. There's at least one video a month that I put up where a lot of the stuff I get just goes out. If I don't use something for a select period of time, it also goes out up for offer as well. So that's pretty cool. So I thought I'd give people a little bit of an insight into how I operate it. I haven't really explained this before. Now, there's also this new YouTube feature called Join, which I'm not going to activate just yet. It's like a YouTube kind of Patreon thing, but I don't think it's supposed to be as good. So I'm not going to go that route right now. I don't think I'll ever run both at the same time. The only advantage of the YouTube thing is, while I think they take a bigger cut of what you get, which sucks, but anyone who I think is subscribed to that particular thing can have their like a special icon in the live streams. I don't know if that's really necessary or not. But you know, the idea is to explain a little bit about how I run the YouTube channel, how I run Patreon, why it's advantageous to join up. If you do join Patreon and you like what I do, you get first dibs on all my stuff. You get the backing tracks, all that kind of thing. There's no hidden content. So, you know, I don't believe in that. My audience is on YouTube. People understand that on Patreon as well. I support because they want to, and they can get first dibs on all this cool stuff. So that's how I operate it. It might not be the same as everybody else, but I like to do it this way. It just keeps everything on YouTube, which is the core of the audience, but also gives anyone who supports the channel first dibs on all the cool stuff. So I hope you like that idea. If you do want to check it out, I'll leave links in the description. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. My name's Shane. If you did enjoy this podcast, please give it a thumbs up. I have lots of cool videos coming up over the next month or so as well. I'm not going to go quite as hard till the end of the year as I did last year. Last year, I burnt myself out doing 90 videos in 90 days. I think I didn't miss a day from October to the end of December, which was insane. I think some days I had 2 videos going up. I was really pushing hard last year. I basically burnt myself out. I do all the editing and all that kind of filming and all that on my own. I know I have a few other guests that turn up, but you know, the bulk of the editing's, all of the editing's done by me. Just sometimes the bulk of the videos are done by me as well, but it's great to have other guys on the channel as well. I was talking to Ryan possibly about getting him back on coming up pretty soon as well. We're going to do some more stuff with him. So yeah, we'll see how we go, but stay tuned for that live video. I hope you enjoy that. And what I might do for the Patreon subs as well is maybe offer the audio track to them for free. So yeah, if you're subscribed even on the $2 band, I'll post a link. You can all download the video or the audio from the video once it's up. So yeah, thanks again for watching. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoyed this, and we will catch you on the next one. See ya.